Welcome back to the new you, life after loss to suicide. I'm Trisha.
And I'm Dawn.
And today we have a guest with us by the name of Michaela. We are going to be touching on depression and different aspects of life that led her to be in that situation, how she handled it, how she continues to cope with it, triggers, things that help, things that don't work. So, Michaela, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how old you are.
I am from a small town, Missouri Valley, Iowa. I'm 24 years old, and I have a five-year-old named Jada. I work for Trisha, actually. She's my boss.
Poor girl.
Yeah. I don't know.
What was the first, looking back at your life, what was the first, what age were you when you first realized that maybe you were having feelings that weren't like everybody else or weren't what you considered normal?
I would say really true feelings not until I was 20 years old. Truly, when I was younger, a lot of it, I just assumed it was completely just hormones or it's just me being a teenager. Cause that's what everybody tells you. You know what I mean? So to me, I thought maybe, I was just dramatic as a kid, or I was different, or I just felt different. And I didn't really realize until I was 20 years old after trying to handle trauma, you know, that, okay, maybe this isn't normal to be this scared to go into a grocery store or to not want to get out of bed.
Right. So even 20 years old is fairly young as a young adult. So what sort of trauma did you have prior to 20 years old that made you feel like maybe something was up?
I've had a great deal of loss. I've lost a little sister to cancer. I've lost my person I would call my stepdad in a motorcycle accident. I've lost all my grandparents, and I don't think I really truly felt like I had trauma to take care of until I lost my mom, because she was the person that was always there for me to work through those things. So after she passed away, that's when I realized I needed to find an outlet or a way to work through those things, because she wasn't there to help me anymore with that.
How old were you when your mom passed?
I was 20 years old.
And she passed from what?
Lung cancer. So she had breast cancer when I was 17, but she was diagnosed with lung cancer when I was 20 years old, and it was very, very fast progressing, as in she was diagnosed and 3 weeks later I lost her. So,
yeah, that was very traumatic, but that also left you in a role at 20 years old you weren't quite prepared to be in, correct?
Mm-hmm. So I have my daughter, and then I also have 3 siblings that were younger than me. So she had 3 kids that were living in her household. You know, I was already moved out because I had my kids. So I had essentially 4 children that I was trying to figure out where they were going to stay and what to go to do moving forward. You know, she had 2 kids that were in high school. So eventually they end up going to a family friend, a so-called family friend. But, I mean, essentially they're like my adult children. I'm the person they call when they need help with things that you would call your parents. Like when you're trying to figure out going to college, and when you're trying to figure out finances, and when you're moving out of, you know, into your own place, I'm their person, so.
Right, when their car breaks, when they need somebody to fix something, when
Trisha
they need
knows.
Help.
Trisha's been there for all of the calls. Yeah. When they need to make a doctor's appointment.
Right. They're all adorable. They all come to the office, and it's great. But it is Mom Michaela.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which it forced you, of course, to grow up a lot faster than you normally would have had to grow up. When I first met Michaela, I would have never guessed, that she was less than a year out from losing her best friend, her mother, to cancer. She was so put together, and she was such a hard worker, and she just went. She took care of the teenagers and her daughter, and she was always at work, never missed work. I had no clue. It was probably several months she worked there before I realized. And I think she had not even taken time to start the grieving process yet. Is that accurate?
Yes, completely. I used to work, I used to work retail. So when my mom passed away, you know, I worked weird hours. I was constantly moving and my schedule was different and I was a manager, so I was in charge. And then when I started working at Woodhouse, I started working 9 to 5 or an 8 to 5, you know, or whatever. And it was like everything slowed down and you start going into everyday life is the same and it starts making you think, you know what I mean? I started working at a job where I was at a desk rather than talking to people all day and socializing. So it definitely made me realize that there's a lot of things, you know, sitting and thinking that I hadn't worked through.
So when you got into that groove and you were sitting there thinking, when did you start see, or what did you start to see coming out in you or happening in your days that made you think like, whoa, maybe I haven't done what I need to do?
Just when your mind starts to settle and you start feeling like you're being suffocated by all of like your fears, all of the basic things that you already know is going to happen or you already know that did happen, and then it just begins to take over your life. Like you're just sitting there and you just begin to feel, I guess, pressure, you know, about things that, you know, everybody around you, everything's going normal and you're just like, why aren't you as stressed out as I am? Why don't you feel this way? You know what I mean? Like you start, it's almost like a suffocating feeling of, you know, it's just like you're grieving by yourself, you know what I mean, in your head. You feel like that nobody else could even understand what you could be going through in your head. But then when you're also not talking about it, of course nobody understands, you know.
Right. And I think for us outwardly around you, I started to see the girl that had everything put together and was always taking care of everybody else. Like the tiniest thing would happen and it would derail her and she would be so upset over this one thing. And I was baffled as to, okay, so what is really going on with her? Because she's not this girl. And we would get to a point where we would be like, I'd be like, okay, Michaela, what's going on? And we would sit down and talk and she'd cry it out. And finally, at what point did you get to where you finally said, I need to do something different?
Well, I tried to, when I first started working at Woodhouse, I tried therapy. It didn't work. It just wasn't the therapist for me. I 100% believe that you need to find the person, you know, that is, it's like picking out anything else in your life. You have to be picky. So I tried meds. It didn't work. And then I quit. But then there was a time that I was sitting on a train and I just thought this could be so easy for me just to be done. You know what I mean? To be done with the hurt. That's what sucks. It's just thinking about being in pain is what it feels like, you know? And that's when I was like, I don't want to feel like this anymore. And I don't ever want to sit at this train and feel this way anymore. And that's when I just decided I really needed to actually work on getting real help. You know, not the cosmetic help where you're just like, yeah, I'm in therapy, or yeah, I'm just going to try Zoloft and see where it goes. But really actually figure out what works for me.
And I can remember that day just like it was yesterday. Michaela had gone home for lunch or something. She ran home for something and my phone rang and it was her, which was odd. And I answered the phone and she was sobbing in tears. And it would have never dawned on me what was about to come out of her mouth. And she said, I'm sitting at the train and it would just be so easy to pull my car onto the tracks and just make it all stop. And my heart stopped. At that point, we had already lost both of my nephews. And I think my heart about exploded in my chest. And I'm thinking, what are the things I should say? What should I do? What should I do? And I kept saying, Michaela, you have a daughter. You can't do this. Your siblings can't survive without you. And we had this conversation. I'm sure I sounded way more panicked than her at that moment. But all I knew is I could not let her off the phone and I could not let her drive onto those train tracks. And we cried it out and we talked it out, but it was probably one of the scariest days of my life. You see this promising girl that's got so much talent in front of her, but also so much trauma and so much heartache that she has no idea what to do with. And she's just looking for some help. And it was scary, scary beyond words, terrifying.
So, Michaela, going back to that day, did that conversation sink into you or did it just feel like someone talking?
You know, I think it was more the fact that I called her was to help validate the fact that I did need help. You know what I mean? I think it did sink in just because I just, even thinking back on it right now, I just think about how much I meant what I said. Kind of scared me back into reality listening to somebody else on the other end. Because I think that sometimes when you feel that way, you don't think anybody's listening. But if you're not talking, then of course nobody's listening, because there's nobody on the other end of that phone call. You know what I mean?
And I think sometimes, too, people do try to reach out, and we as humans have gotten so busy in our world that we don't take time to listen or be empathetic about it. So,
yeah, we don't hear the things in between the lines. And if Michaela had called and just said, I'm sad, I may have been able to easily dismiss that as, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. She didn't say I'm sad. She's like, I'm sitting at the train and I'm going to pull my car in front of it. Like, that was the loudest scream for help that I've ever heard in my life. And all I kept remember what you felt like when your mom left you. You cannot do that to Jada. You can't leave her without a mom. She has to have a mom. But in the back of my brain, I'm screaming like, you don't know what to say. What if you say the wrong thing? And, you know, fast forward, here we're sitting. But I am beyond grateful. It's been a weird path. And Dawn and I have talked about this a million times, how life is quirky and it's weird. And it puts sometimes the people in your path that you need to have in your path. And Michaela and I joke a lot at work that I'm the office mom. But it kind of comes full circle. She doesn't have a mom. And so when she has things like buying a house and she doesn't know what she's doing, and she calls me and like, will you come and look at the house? Or things happen like that. And she was probably one of the first people to call me the day Morgan died. And she called at the most awkward time. It was when I already knew in my gut she was gone, but we hadn't found her yet. And I got a text from Michaela and she's like, what is wrong? What's wrong? You need to call me. Like, she knew something was wrong. So it's kind of like, she didn't have a mom, and now I'm missing my daughter, but we have each other. And so God puts people in your path because then he knows that you need them. So we do rely on a lot on each other for many different things, but it's just crazy how you cross paths.
So Michaela, you said that originally when you went to your doctor, it wasn't the right fit. What have you found that has worked, or what work did you need to do to help you get to where you are right now?
Well, when I actually first went to therapy, the therapist I had went to, which was what my primary doctor recommended, she kind of told me, oh, you just seem like, you know, you have it all together, and if you need anything, just let me know, but I don't think we need to make another appointment. You know what I mean? So it was kind of weird because it was like she pretty much told me, you seem great, so I'm just going to let you go. Just let me know how the meds do, and we can book a session if you need to. And I think that was kind of like, that's where we have a problem. Just because somebody looks like they have everything together doesn't mean that they're okay. There's a reason why somebody is deciding to reach out to somebody. So I think that when it came to when I really, really needed a therapist, and I found the therapist that I have, my therapist is somebody that can relate to me. So the one thing is that she was a single mom for years. So that was one thing that we can relate on. You know, it's just more of being able to relate to my therapist. She can put herself in my shoes. And I think a lot of people kind of they forget about that somebody else walks different shoes than you. And the fact that she can empathize with me, or she can, you know, talk through things, not even that she's analyzing me, but she's like a friend that's there to listen, and that she's there to give advice, but she's not sitting there with a notepad just thinking, okay, so what are you upset about this week, or what are you sad about, and I don't know, you just seem great. Just talking through, like you're talking to a friend about the things that are hardest for you without making you feel like you're crazy.
Right. And how about medication? Did that seem to help, or are you better off with just the therapy part of it?
No, I do. I do take medication for antidepressants and anti-anxiety. And I think they do help. And one thing I've noticed is sometimes your body changes. And there was a time, you know, I was taking a medication and I thought it was going well and I just felt like it wasn't working anymore. And so, of course, the first thing you want to do is quit. And I've noticed to pay attention to my body, because there are times where I feel like this just isn't working anymore. And so instead of quitting, I've recognized that and I've gone to my doctor and I've adjusted things, but it definitely makes a difference. And also remembering that when you feel better, that doesn't mean you just quit, because I've made that mistake before. You think, oh, I feel great now, so I don't need these anymore. And that is not how it works at all.
I think that's a great point, because a lot of people, when they feel that way, want to quit the medication because, oh, now they feel great. And then they find themselves on that downward spiral again. So that's great advice.
And, it's odd because when we work the hours that we do, we spend more time with the people in the office than we actually spend with our family. And when Michaela would get to where she would feel good and she would quit taking her meds, it's almost like me and the other gals in the office, we would pinpoint her about the same time she would pinpoint herself. And I'd be like, husband, are you taking your medicine? And she'd be like, no. And she's like, I know. But it just doesn't feel right, or I feel fine. And it's, you don't think, and even I, because I have never taken a psych med until Morgan died. And now I do. But you don't realize when you get on them and they get regulated. You don't realize in your head how I'm feeling decent. I can function through the day. And you don't realize when you start to divert from that how evident it is for everyone around you. And even my daughter, when Paige stops taking hers, I'll be like, hey, what's going on? Like, you're totally going off the rails here. And so Michaela did try to wean herself off a couple times, and then we realized really quick, like, that's not going to happen. It doesn't work for her. And the best thing, like she said, is getting a good doctor and a good therapist that she can communicate with and is comfortable with.
Yeah, because as soon as this last time that I did adjust, I've only adjusted a few times, but I just knew right then that I was not feeling right, that I think that I needed to. I had just gotten a higher dose, or it was more long-lasting, And it was the smartest thing I could have done, because, after a month, I already felt 100%. I just felt like a whole better person. So it's just different when you can recognize, you can feel your body feeling different, or you can feel your mind getting those thoughts, and okay, it's time to try something different or something that works better.
So can you explain that when you say the thoughts? What is your body telling you before that?
there's times where, you just start thinking, like, you're so alone, or that nobody cares, or that nobody's listening. And it's kind of like, sometimes I feel like some of those thoughts are irrational almost, because you have all these people that love you, and you have all these people that care about you, and you have all these people that ask you, hey, what's wrong? What's up? And it's almost like you get to that point where it just doesn't even matter, because how would they even understand how I feel? You just start feeling lonely, and you have all these people that are like, hey, what's up? And then you don't want to talk about it. But then you go back and you're like, nobody cares. It's just kind of like that thought of being sad and not being able to express why you're sad, because you don't even know why you're so sad. You don't know why you can't get out of bed,
So did your therapist recommend like journaling or any self-help things that you have found helpful, I guess?
The best thing that she, I think, does, and I see it in my everyday life, is she'll do a lot of analogies. I'm trying to think of a good example, but sometimes I'll talk everything through, and then she'll say it back to me, and I'm like, okay, when you say it like that, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of, I see why you think that sounds really irrational. She has recommended journaling, and I've done journaling before. Sorry, I'm having a blank.
One thing I know Michaela does, and she does it a lot with her daughter, which is kind of neat, she does vision boards, and that's kind of like she manifests things that she wants to happen in her life, or things that she knows she wants to change. And so she does a vision board, and she manifests, and she does a little bit of meditation, all things that help her get recentered when she's feeling kind of all over the place. And they make an activity of it. And so she's done, we've even had to do them at work, because Michaela gets some big ideas. And so then we do them at work, and we do positivity boards and things like that.
So explain the Envision board.
Yeah, so me and my daughter actually did one before, and sometimes some of my friends do. But I'll just take, magazine clippings and, things that I want in my life. So which is crazy because 6 months ago I made a vision board with a new house, and I just bought a house. But I'll take clippings that remind me of things that I want in my life, as in goals or ways to move forward. So, like my daughter, I mean, her vision board is mostly like, you know, favorite cartoons and dresses and princesses because she wants to be a princess. So I'll just envision all of the things that I want in my life that makes me happy, makes me feel, you know, full. And then we'll just kind of make like an afternoon out of it.
That's cool.
And she talks about that a lot at work. So I had come across this vision board book on Amazon, and I actually bought it and brought it to work. So it's once a week you go in there and you make a vision board, and it's the things that I want to happen in the next few months or whatever. And so it says to go back in every morning before you start your day and look at your vision board. And so in 6 months, I want the podcast to have this many viewers, or I want this much of my book written, or I want to work out this many days, whatever it is that you want to accomplish. But if you're looking at that vision board and you're making a visual recognition of that every day, like this is what I want and this is what I see and I can do this. And you kind of put like, I can do this by doing what? These certain steps. She's really good at that. So she makes goals for herself. And Michaela seems to have manifested her own future.
When you say it like that, that was my biggest thing is Trisha would be like, stop worrying about, you know, 10 years from now. Stop worrying, because that is a lot of my anxiety was the future. And that's one thing I've talked about with my therapist, is that I get so worried about what's going to be going on a month from now or a year from now or 5 years from now. And she's like, you need to start focusing on the things you can even control now instead of focusing on, you know, something that you really have no control in fixing.
And I think a lot of that comes from losing her mom and having to be the one to fix everything for everybody. Michaela felt like she had to control everything. And I can empathize with that because I'm that person. I want to fix everything for everybody. And when you get to a certain point where you're just tapped out, you just have to start weeding it out. And I say, girl, pick off the ones you can fix. Like, what can you handle today? What's on this plate that you can tackle today? And she's like, she's a completely different person than she was even a year ago. Between therapy and the things she's chosen to do, it's just amazing what she's done in the last year.
So if her Envision board shows next week that she wants to be your boss...
That'll never happen.
I joke because I train her and she's like, oh, help train me to do that so I can help you with some of this harder stuff. So I'll train her and then she'll ask me a question and I'll blankly stare at her and she says, don't do that. I know what you're doing. You're just going to make me try to figure it out myself. I said, I'm just preparing you for when I leave or retire. And she said, you're not leaving.
I can't be too valuable. She can't leave me. I need her.
That's awesome.
So aside from like your own trauma in your life and your dealing with depression, what other experiences have you had with whether it's depression, anxiety, suicide, anything like that outside of yourself?
Outside of myself, I would say I know that my dad deals with, you know, some sort of depression. I don't think, me and him don't really have a good relationship. So I think that I haven't experienced too much outside of me, and that's probably why it took me so long to recognize it. Just because I've never been around somebody who's had those feelings. I don't have a whole lot of family around. You know, my friends are all around the same age as me. So growing up, you know, I just assumed that sometimes you just get really sad and sometimes you just don't want to be alive anymore. And I thought that was normal because I had nobody around me to, like, recognize exactly what that was.
So now that you've been through that, is that a conversation you and your friends have?
You know, some of my friends do. I think that it's kind of a tough conversation for a lot of people. I think that a lot of people hold it in. And so when people start to open up and they actually know I can relate, since I'm the friend mom too, I take care of everybody. And it's a little different when somebody says, hey, I've been dealing with this, and then somebody else can relate, for somebody to open up and actually talk about it. I don't think it's a huge thing that people, you know, put in the group chat or say when they're out drinking. They don't want to talk about that kind of stuff.
And I think that's one of our missions too, is to stop the stigma. And if you don't have that conversation, you can't stop it. You can't change things. So thank you for sharing your story, definitely, because I think that's important that people do that.
I think that's what makes it hard for people my age, is that they don't want to have, you know, everything is social media, everything is picture perfect. Nobody wants to share about how what they struggle inside. You know, you go out with your friends and they're never going to be, you know, I was just really sad this week. They want everything to look perfect. Everybody wants to for everything to be perfect, and that's not how it always is.
In fact, most of the time, that's not how it is.
Right, very much true. Michaela was also, like, very instrumental when Paige was really, really struggling, and I just was at a loss for answers. I would come to work, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. And Michaela would, she is closer to Paige's age, and she's like, I understand what she's feeling. I understand where she's coming from. And they connected on a level like that, and Michaela could always be like, hey, Paige is not right. You need to catch up with her, or she's going to be fine. She's going to be fine. And so I was so grateful that I had an in that way that she could understand Paige in a way I didn't. Now Paige is better. She's regular on her meds and she can verbalize, you know, like she was on here and did her interview. She can verbalize when she's feeling off or whatever, because she recognizes now. But so you're good at recognizing that. Do you see now that Jade is getting a little older? She's going to be 5. Do you have conversations with her to let her know that it's okay to tell you about her feelings and if she's feeling bad or?
Yeah, 100%, because I think a lot of people tell kids that it's not okay to cry and it's not okay to feel. You know what I mean? So when she tells me, you know, when she wants to express her feelings, I've been trying to teach her how to express it with words. These kids could cry, and just because they're crying doesn't mean that's necessarily explaining how they actually feel. I say, okay, I know you're crying, but why are you crying? You know, what can we do to make this better? We've had those conversations. Because I think some people just want kids to just stop crying and they just want it to. You know what I mean? You don't cry, it's going to be fine. But kids experience that. I mean, younger than you even think anymore. And people don't even realize it.
It's overwhelming when you can't verbalize it too. I mean, mm-hmm. not knowing how to put it into words.
Dawn probably sees that way more than we do. As being in the school system and teaching, she runs into a lot of students that have no idea what they're feeling. They just know it's not good.
And my sister works for the school, too, and that's when I kind of realized, you know, she actually had a kid that in class, and they were talking about their feelings, and they said, talk about something that makes you sad. He goes, I don't get sad. I don't. I never get sad. He's like, I refuse to cry. My sister's like, you know, what are the parents telling him at school that it's not okay to be sad? You know, because, I mean, you can't really go around it. Eventually, things are going to make you upset. He's like, I can't. It's like, well.
And I think part of that is the way that we teach our kids. You know, growing up, I very rarely saw a male cry. And it was because they were supposed to be the tough guys. And, you know, it's not that way. It's about being vulnerable, and it's about showing your emotions, and obviously there's times and places to do that, but it's important that we allow kids the right to do that.
Yeah, I think it's more of just explaining to kids a healthy way of doing it, you know, because then when you hold things in, I've been there, I hold things in so far that when it comes out like a volcano, and then I can't put any of it back in.
Right, and then you don't know what the real problem is because it all came out at one time, so where do you start to put those pieces back together? And that was one thing Dawn and I set out right away, is I think, you know, it makes me wonder how long Morgan felt this way. How long did she suffer? And when we asked Paige the day she was on, how long did you feel this way? Or when was the first time she said 10? And I think I knew as a teenager, you know, after she hit puberty, that things were kind of going astray. But 10, and I'm thinking back to when she was 10, I'm your mom. I should know these things. And I was blown away that at 10 years old, she could have possibly had a suicidal thought at 10. So we're not having these conversations near soon enough for these kids. So that was one of our goals, was to set out to make a conversation or make it okay. Make it open for these kids to be, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to feel however you're feeling, but we need to give them words to put to how they're feeling so they can get help.
Yeah, because I actually do recall, you know, times, you know, in middle school when I was transitioning to being a teenager, that I had these thoughts, but we were just told that, oh, you're hormonal because you're a woman. You're turning into a woman, and, you know, that it is what it is, and, you know, they don't explain to you that you can have these feelings and it has nothing to do with, you know, you just being a girl. You can have feelings no matter what you are.
And right. I think in hindsight, looking back on that, you know, it is true. There is a lot of hormonal changes. However, if we explain to kids that say, you know, if you're feeling this on a regular basis and that mm-hmm. feeling doesn't change or go away, then you might mm-hmm. need help. But if it's a mm-hmm. one-time deal once a month, maybe, for example, then
yeah.
it's mm-hmm. a little bit of a different story. And I think just putting that into words for them to understand is important. I mean, I didn't even make that connection until just now talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is there, if there was one piece of advice or a piece of advice you could give to someone that was in your position when you were younger, what would that be, Michaela?
I would say to just don't give up. I think it's so easy to just say, you know, the meds aren't working, the therapy isn't working, that you forget that there's other avenues and there's other ways and that you don't have to stop, you know, trying different meds or you don't have to stop going to the doctor. Until you figure out what works best for you, because everybody's different. So just because the doctor thinks that you should take this medication doesn't mean that it's going to work. You know, that there's always something else that might work better. It's worth trying until you find something that works for you.
And meds can be tricky. You may not get it on the first time or the second or the third or the fourth, and it could mm-hmm. take you a while, but eventually mm-hmm. you can find the right med.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing I learned from, you know, the beginning of me trying to, I wouldn't say fix me, but to learn how to handle, you know, everything that was thrown on my plate is that it's not worth giving up. Like, nobody's life is worth giving up trying to find a better solution to make them feel better or feel normal even.
So the first step would be to verbalize it and recognize that that you need help, and then never give up, because there's something out there for everybody. The human brain is one of the most complex, confusing areas for the medical industry. They're still working on it, but we're getting places, and they're getting better. Just can't lose faith.
So a couple of things, I don't know, I wanted to share with our viewers about depression. Some of the facts, I guess, that it's common and it's a serious medical illness that can affect how you feel and the way you think and the way you act, but it is treatable and it causes feelings of sadness or loss, sometimes of interest in or activities that you once enjoyed. The one thing that kind of stuck out to me when I was looking at this is that if it goes untreated, it can actually change your brain and making episodes worse or more frequent. So it also impacts the body and its physical health. It can cause fatigue, digestive issues, pain, other complications related to the poor decisions that we've made. And one of the things, I even look back at some of my students and former students, a lot of times in school, I noticed belly aches. So then you go back and you say, okay, you know, is it depressed? Is it anxiety? Is it stress? What is it that's causing that? And, you know, if you have that kid who's got a lot of frequent stomach aches, is that something you need to be looking at? And I do think it is, especially in today's world. There's a lot of stressors. There were 5 warning signs, and it said that if you had 2 or more of these, that it might be time for you to get some help. One was long-lasting sadness or irritability, extreme high and low moods, excessive fear, worry, or anxiety, social withdrawal, or dramatic changes in eating or sleeping habits. And then it can also be associated with short-term memory loss. And I forgot what I did last hour, let alone did 2 days ago. So that might be something I want to get checked out.
That is one of the very first things that I noticed shortly after Morgan died was my inability to retain or remember things. And thank God that Michaela is my assistant, because she's 24 and she never forgets anything. So she could remember things, because I would blankly stare at her like, and she would remember right away. But that's definitely a thing. I would forget things that I had known forever.
And one of the other things that talked about is that 75% of all mental health conditions begin before the age of 24. So I commend you, Michaela, for, you know, tuning into your body and picking up on those things and getting that help sooner rather than later. You know, I look at my daughter, she was 23 years old, and the things I know now, I wished I would have known then. And maybe it would have made a difference. Maybe it wouldn't have. I don't know. But
I truly, I don't think that I would be where I'm at without Trisha. Even if she doesn't even realize it, you know, having her in the office, she was my sounding board. It was just, I don't think if I had that person that I could talk to and that I could be honest with, I don't think I would have had the guts to get the help. So I think that it's important that people find, you know, those people that can relate with them or the people that they can trust, you know, because it's hard to do that stuff by yourself. It really is.
Agreed.
And the important thing about that is I'm so grateful that I could do that for her, that I couldn't do it for Morgan. But the difference is that Michaela could verbalize, or that I spent all day every day with her and I could see it, where, like, our daughters had moved out and they had jobs away from us and they had lives. And even though I talked to Morgan every day, I could not sit there and look at her all day every day. So being able to tell people what's really going on is a huge factor in us being able to help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Because you could just see me and you would know, you know what I mean, how my day was going. And it's hard to, people can lie on the phone. They can lie over text. And you can't hide that face to face. So it's easy for people to hide those things when you don't see them as often.
That's one of the positives, sure, with human connections.
Mm-hmm. True.
And we've lost a ton of that with text messaging, emailing, social media. Kids will hide behind electronics rather than having a full-on discussion.
Agreed, 100%. Well, Michaela, I want to again thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you sharing your story and that it will help someone who's listening as well. And if they need help, that they'll reach out and find that sounding board or that person that can help them. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and I appreciate you. Thank you for everything that you do. And I'm so proud of you.
Thank you for everything you do. Really, I couldn't imagine being in a different office.
No, we work pretty good together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to call it for this episode, and I hope everybody enjoyed it. As always, if there's some sort of input you have on this topic, please feel free to drop us a message, ask us any questions. If you have questions for us you'd like us to relay to Michaela, by all means, please go ahead and send it to us.
Right. Thanks, everyone. Till next time.
Bye-bye. If you or someone you know is in crisis or struggling with mental health or suicidal thoughts, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255. Remember, you're never alone. You can also find resources at suicidepreventionlifeline.org.